This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.
Hello and welcome to Inside Commodity Futures. My name is Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take. John Payne will be joining us shortly from This Week in Grain, but a quick recap here in the past week since we've talked. December corn last traded 392, down 45 cents from last week. November beans was down 30. We were at 1104 last week. And D-sweet, we've been down 10 over the past week. Coming in, the highs over there were 438. And now we're at about 428. And John, you have anything to add to that?
No, really, really nasty price action. But if you've listened to Craig and I for a while, I don't think there's anything that's really developed other than this Brexit that has really telegraphed this. I mean, we've been following the weather for a while. I think we've commented that there really wasn't anything worth writing home about as far as the long side to go with weather. We were pointing out the high open interest in corn and then, relatively high open interest in soybeans, but we did mention maybe you want to stay away from that market. So a lot that we've could do better, but I think if you've been listening to us for a while, the things that we're analyzing, whether it be the seasonals, the spread action, open interest, some technical indicators, I think we've been somewhat right on. But again, it's harder to trade it. It's easy to analyze it. It's tough to trade it. So we'll do our best here to try to give you some knowledge to kind of bring you back down to earth. If you happen to be short side and walking on the moon at this point, you're probably real excited. And if you're long and you've had your head ripped off this week, don't fret. There's a long way to go before this corn's out of the ground. So try to cover it all here.
Yeah, absolutely. So that Brexit did change market sentiment, a little bit, and not just for what's going on in Europe, but now there's concerns about China, global growth slowdown, with the Chinese currency coming down. That makes it more expensive for them to import commodities, mm-hmm. so they can buy less commodities. So I think we've seen commodities as a whole, hasn't just been the grain markets, but crude oil has come down in the past week, natural gas has come down in the past week, copper has sold off some, along with the grain markets. So I think there's more of a big broad range of dumping of some of these commodities. While gold and silver have done well, the U.S. dollar is higher, the treasuries are higher. So it's kind of like reminds me a little bit of the risk-off, risk-on trades that we used to see a couple of years ago when there were big banking issues or concerns about global sloth. There's a huge uncertainty of what's going on with the United Kingdom leaving Europe, European Union, and what that's going to mean. So I think we saw a lot of that. You combine that with the funds being long so much, especially in the corn and the beans. I think Andy Daniels likes to say, trading isn't a team sport, right? No one's going to exit orderly. Everyone's going to rush for the door at the same time. Yep. And I think that's what we've seen. Soybeans made, after being down to about 1040 today in November, actually had a strong close today, coming back up to about 1076. At one point we were down over 30 points. So that showed some strength. I'm not surprised there, just because we got a ways to go to make the soybean crop. And, as we've got the WASD next week, we're still going to be under 300 million bushels, for projected new crop, which, is not abundant. It's adequate to maybe if you get to 200 million, now you're getting a little tight. So there is some supportive strength in the soybean market. I know John and I were just talking before we came on air here about corn and wheat, and it's getting to levels where, you know, it's hard to stay short if you're short, or hard to get bearish on it if with prices so low. I'm not saying that it can't go lower, but it just seems like we're starting to run to, you know, run its course eventually.
Well, I kind of look, I mean, these markets are interconnected to a certain extent. Wheat can go low and corn and beans can rally, but at some point, you know, I think if you're looking for some sort of bullish twinge to hang on to here, it would be the fact that soybeans trading above $11. It's you know, there's some substitutive factors that go in, and I think down the road, it just from a money flow perspective, the fact that beans hang up here gives me a little more confidence to say roll hedges down, or to maybe even take a shot on the long side in wheat or corn, just because I'm seeing that there is continuous strength in the beans, and if a story would develop in wheat or corn, I think we'll trade higher pretty quickly. The question is, where is that going to develop? And in, you know, you and I can scan the horizon right now, and I think both of us have a difficult time finding anything in wheat or corn that's bullish. But there are some things down here. You and I mentioned before we went on the radio with a guy we work with on the grain side, a cash side of things, that, you know, the loan values for hard red wheat essentially are right there. So if you're, you know, rather than sell wheat in the high twos, you can essentially borrow from the government on that wheat, and if you don't ever sell it, well, you just default on the loan. That's kind of the insurance policy. So there's a little bit of a floor in there when it comes to corn. It's still July 6th. You know, we've got a long way to go. And, you know, I'm not saying that the yields are, you know, we need to be pricing in 160 yields or even less than 165 or 167 where trend would be. But, you know, to start to just assume that we're going to have all this grain around when, you know, the carryout's still 12% stocks to use, demand is strong. And I think if, you know, just the stagnant sideways demand could keep a somewhat floor under corn. And then, of course, the soybeans. You mentioned it, the WASD, even with these increased acres, what are you looking at, Craig? 250?
Yeah, right. It just depends. I mean, it depends on the yield, too, because the crop conditions have really been good, you know, for good to excellent. So, you know, you can make the case that, you know, last year we had good to excellent ratings lower than what we have now, right? We were worse off last year, or put another way, we're better this year. And yet, you know, we had a 48 yield last year, right? So the USDA is calling for 46.7. If they start inching the, even with the acres, if the, you know, and we have a 46.7 yield, you know, we're about, in our estimates, 230, 240, 250, you know, on the new crop carryout. Now, if the USDA starts increasing yields because the crop conditions are so good, you know, for every, basically for every bushel we go higher, if we went from like 46.7 to 47.7, you know, that's adding on basically, you know, 50 million, let's just call it, bushels to ending stock. So, now you can make up for that pretty fast, but it's just something to, you know, to keep track of, and just to be, you know, just to realize that we can, it's easier for the, you know, for the crop to do poorly, let's say, and then supply comes off, you know, to go to, I think 48 last year was a record. So, you know, the weather has to keep on being this good for basically the rest of July and the first half of August, you know, for us to get there, which is, you know, it can happen, but the odds are probably against it.
Yeah, I agree with you. So just in the last 2 weeks, we've seen a major shift in open interest. You know, we've seen, I'm interested to see where we are. These reports, if Craig and I, you see us writing about open interest, they're always taken as of Tuesday, and then we get the numbers on Friday. So there's a three-day gap there, really, and even by Monday, by the time we're writing about them, that essentially it's a very backward-looking indicator. But what it does give us is some confidence, I think, as far as where the, you know, the next, say, wave of selling would come from, or if it would even exist. And I think you're to the point on wheat where there really is very little that's going to come on the spec side to push prices. I think the commercials could certainly do it, but from the standpoint of speculation, I don't think these funds are going to come in and short down here in the low fours. For soybeans, they sit in a pretty high level on the open interest, but I think it's a lot less than it was. I mean, we've dropped the dollar in the last week. I think some of that is commercial selling, but you also have to remember that there is very little you know, as far as soybeans in the pipeline, new crop, that I think a lot of guys are in a hurry to commit at this point in the crop year.
Right.
And then lastly, it would be corn, you know, where the open interest was closer to 300,000 bush or contracts 3 weeks ago, and I would assume we're below 100,000 at this point. So there's still more selling that can come in the corn markets, but I think we've exhausted a lot of those selling opportunities in the short run here.
Yeah, and just to reiterate what John was saying about the commitment of traders, you know, the CFTC, if your positions are – if you're a large trader and you're basically have a position so large that it's deemed reportable, they got to submit that to the CFTC. And they take those numbers and tabulate them as of, let's say, the close on Tuesday. But they don't release them for 3 days later. So on Friday, when we get that commitment of traders report, and you know the big traders have to report, you know, what they're long or short, and you get to see that, that's of 3 days ago. So that's what we mean by commitment of traders, and that's how we get a sense of how long or short the spec funds are. You're right, with wheat, the you know the funds are very short wheat. And you got to start asking yourself, who else is going to sell wheat? Plus, if it's at loan values, meaning that a farmer can look at his wheat, and if it gets to a price low enough, he can go to the government, take a loan out on his wheat, which is cash for him. And if the wheat goes higher, you know, then he can repay the loan. If the wheat just keeps on going lower, you know, he'll eventually, he can default on the loan, and which really what happens is then the government takes his wheat, and it's almost a sale for him. Which is how that works, which is something we have not talked about or I haven't heard talked about in a long, long time. So I wouldn't be surprised, you know, for all of you who are grain traders and really locked into the grain markets, if that comes up more and more in newsletters or on the radio, you know, basically wheat going out on loan. I'm curious to see how that would affect the wheat spreads.
Mm-hmm.
We
have full there, right? I haven't even really paid attention, but it looks like we've pretty much been consistently selling everything.
Yeah, and I would think, you know, if you're a farmer and you can actually send out wheat on loan, you know, you probably do that through the elevator, you know, and so it would just encourage more storage, I would think.
Sure. Yeah, and it pays to store, but even, I mean, gosh, it just to think that you're going to store it and hedge it off of the March or the May, which is even, I mean, 350 or 450. I mean, where we were trading 450 on the front month just a week and a half ago. So I don't know, tough decisions for the wheat farmer to make. I can't imagine planning. We get an uptick in planting next year, so there's maybe that story that can develop. I think France is having some issues, but other than that, I mean, the Black Sea appears to be okay. You know, we got a lot of wheat around.
Yeah.
I will say the funds are very, very short wheat. So if you're looking to try to play a wild card on some sort of, you know, unknown, shoot, who knows what happens to the world wheat supply, something, you name it, wheat might be a good vehicle for that at this point. But like I said, with the amount of product around without some sort of event, I have a hard time believing we're going to get some sort of 20-30% rally on just fumes. But I would have said when corn was trading 430 that we were going to be at 350 within 2 weeks. I would have told you to go take a leap there too. So
right.
There's a lot that can happen quickly in these markets. And just looking at soybeans on the close today is a good proof of that.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about corn, in just terms of the spreads and what's going on, you know, when we did our WASD numbers for corn, you know, not only did the USDA basically, we thought we were going to lose acres for corn, and we didn't, we even added a little bit. And then with the yields, you know, the USDA has a 168 yield. You know, the good to excellent ratings for corn right now are so good that we're seeing analysts starting to bump up their yield averages. Now, I don't know if the USDA will bump up yield or even if it's warranted, but you know, there are some people out there saying, you know, maybe 169, 170, you know, could be more of a realistic yield for corn. So then all of a sudden, new crop corn carryout is above 2.2 billion or 2.3 billion and really can kind of weigh down on the market for a while. So like I was saying, we're getting to prices for corn where I can see how people start thinking it's a little bit of a value play. And certainly if we made another run towards $3, I think, you know, between it getting so cheap, historically, or at least since ethanol, you know, the ethanol mandates kicked in, you know, about 8 or 9 years ago, where crude oil is, the fact that corn is a fee component, you know, if it went down another 20 or 30 cents, it's below probably the revenue insurance price and it would be probably a pretty good deal in the export market. So, I don't know. I mean, it's hard. John said it was harder to get bullish on corn. I kind of agree with him. It is hard to find a bull story for him, but eventually prices get so low, it becomes very difficult to bearish too.
Yeah, I think that's very well said, and you know, we're just, I think the market's a little bit on off kilter here, and I've been, you know, thinking to myself, we'll see. The ability to sell 360 to 380 new crop corn, I think, is going to be available to you at some point over the next, you know, year. Mm-hmm. So if you're sitting on a lot of new crop, I don't think panicking is the play at this point. Still a lot of market to trade. So right now, I think just kind of hit a confluence of events combining with really good weather. You know, takes essentially all of the weather premium out of it. So kind of starting back to square one now, and we'll have to see where the USDA sees things. But I would imagine they're probably going to stick right where they've been. I don't know the date on this. I'd love to see kind of where their yield estimates start. But even with the good crop conditions, I don't think we'll see them come off the trend too much. I don't know a lot on that. Do you?
No, I don't. I think we'll be, if they change yield at all, I think they'd bump it up maybe a half bushel to a bushel just early on. Right. I can't see more than that until they know more. I will say this, though. You know, I know there's some spreads John and I have been following in the corn market, and if you look at Dece versus Dece, we're now at, what, a 28-cent carry?
Yeah.
We're breaking through the lows, you know. But, you know, if you look at September versus Dece, you know, the old crop, new crop spread, we're only at a 6 or 7 cent carry, while full carry is closer to 15. You know, SEP versus March, is, you know, which is a seasonal trade, you know, that you see. So is SEP Dece. And you tend to see SEP Dece and SEP March be seasonal trades for seasonal traders, you know, as you get into, like, now, like, from July 4th till harvest, you know, is usually when you see those type things. So the carry, there's something going on. I don't know what it is. I don't know why old crop is still holding its value a little, you know, relatively to new crop right now, which, you know, we were seeing Dece making new lows, but which is the new crop this year versus new crop in 17. So, you know, Dece versus, like, red Dece is what some traders refer to it as. But the old crop versus new crop is still hanging in there. I find that interesting. I would think that even if we have a 1.7 billion carryout for old crop, I know the new crop is, let's say, 2.2. So there's obviously a lot more new crop available than old crop, but, you know, in terms of the balance sheet, but it's still a lot of corn, you know, either way you slice it. So I would think anyone who was harvesting early, you know, down south would probably want to try to get old crop prices because, you know, the store from SEP to Dece is 15 cents. And right now SEP is only trading, you know, about 6 or 7 cents underneath December. So I don't know. I would look, I don't know why that is. The trader in me thinks that the carry would continue to widen out in SEP Dece and SEP March, but I guess we'll have to see. It is a little bit of a sign that makes me pick my head up and say, is there something going on in the corn market that I don't know about?
Yeah, and we're seeing the spread, the next spread you mentioned, Dece versus March of the next year, all the way out of the dime. So it's
right, yes. That's,
you know, you would think you'd see something more like that in September where you would be able to see the market spread like that, but I think, you know, the market understands that farmers need money, and, you know, you have a lot of corn out there still, 2.4 billion bushels sitting on old crop storage right now on farms. So those are bushels that are going to move directly into the farmer pocket when they do sell them, and that combined with the new crop, you know, they're going to be selling on that. So the advice I have for everybody remains the same, is that if you have old crop bushels in hand, you don't really want to be selling those at the same time that the new crop harvest is starting, because you're going to be commingling all of this wheat a little bit corn, kind of like we've seen in the wheat market. Say if you held your wheat in storage all the way till this July delivery, well, you're selling it with this new crop harvest, and the market doesn't care when it was grown. It just needs to meet quality, and at this point, I think that's where really the losing can take place. So, you know, if it were my bushels, I'd look to get them out of my control sometime soon and try to re-own them on the board. You know, use the way that the market's structured right now. Like Craig said, you know, if there's only a little bit of a spread difference between SEP and Dece, you know, maybe you jump in and sell the SEP and buy the Dece and sell the bushels and try to make that difference in the spread. Or there's a lot of different ways to play it. We can break it down individually for you, but I think using the board in these kind of markets, this is where it pays to have a hedge account, because you can make decisions without having to make decisions on the bulk of your quality.
Yeah. And, you know, in terms of just speaking of spreads, I don't know, I've been writing a lot, and we've been talking about this here, about the soybean spreads and how I like to follow soybeans, and it's that Nov versus May spread. Right. I like looking at Nov because
– how'd that close today?
42. It's been crazy. Okay. It's just, you know, three sessions ago, we had a high of 72 cents. Okay. This morning, we had a low of 28 cents. I mean, so just so you all know what's going on here, even though the exchange lists that spread as technically a new crop, same crop year, it's not going to perform like a new crop spread. It's actually going to trade more like a new crop, old crop spread, because November beans are basically U.S. new crop. You know, that's where we harvest this year, and for our export market, it's going to be we export basically from October to, let's say, March, or actually we probably start exporting in August, September, all the way until March, until like South America comes up. So when you look at that May 2017 contract, even though it's technically new crop U.S., it's also new crop South America, because by the time you get to that May contract, that South American supply has come on. So if there's going to be a shortage in beans, you have to price ration that November, so you have enough beans to get to the next South American crop, which would be, let's say, in May, maybe March, depending if you really got some good beans that are harvested early. So when you look at that spread, the reason why it's had a 50, almost 40 to 50 cent range over the past 3 days is because, if the market's selling off big, then that November is going to come off more than the May. If we do think we're going to have tight supplies in the United States for new crop, let's say like 200 million bushels, then that November really has to trade 50, 60, 70 cents over May to defer as many sales as possible until it gets into South America. So I've been saying, if you want to know what's going on in soybeans, if we're tight or not, or what, follow that no versus May spread. And I think the price action today, the fact that we went down to 28 and then almost closed again, almost closed where we settled, is a little bit, it's a little bit bullish. Maybe it's just because it's so early and the crop needs to be made. But I don't know.
You look back 6 weeks from now, you can easily point to that low and say, well, this was the low. I'm not saying that is the low, but, that's one of those moves where you look back and you're like, well, geez, But in a vacuum, we're still off the highs by 40 cents.
Absolutely. So it's interesting. So that's something I continue to look at. If soybeans are lower tomorrow or over the next couple of weeks and that spread's still holding on, then I'm thinking it's more liquidation. But if that spread really breaks down below again and soybeans are lower, then it's not just liquidation. It's probably like, the market's now replacing the commodity. So that's why I look at the spread. Like November beans are down about, a dollar, almost a dollar from where they were a couple of weeks ago, a little bit more than a dollar.
Probably four days ago.
Yeah, exactly. Crazy, right?
Yeah.
So what I look at, and this is how I read the market, is, I'll look at those spreads. And if the spreads are falling apart too, if the spreads reverse and then turn bearish and basically do a reversal, then fundamentally the market thinks we have enough beans to get through. Otherwise, if I see November beans coming down and yet the spreads are still holding strong, usually that means to me that we're just seeing some kind of market event of a liquidation, or there are outside forces coming in, like, let's say, it's the macro numbers bringing things down. So just so that's why I look at it, that's why I keep on talking about it. And I got to tell you, if November beans closes probably below, 1070, 1065, I would think the market would consider that like the kind of the last straw technically on, we've broken support. And for that May versus the no versus May spread, I would think, 37, 38, with the no of trading over May would be big. So that if you're looking for a direction in soybeans, if we break those levels, I think it, could put on a world of hurt to the bean market.
Yeah, well, I think beans are going to be the not hard to make this statement. I think beans are going to be the wild market in the second half of the year, just because the differences in carry out. But I would imagine we're going to see some harsh reminders to not only the U.S. trader but the world trader that the bean market is stretched a little thin here, and we can't be breaking the market too much on spec reversals. Because essentially we gotta ration some demand, especially if we're not gonna have that trend. Now, if we have trend, that's different. But
right,
if we start pricing in 44, you're subtracting 100 million from the number Craig will give you on Friday or Tuesday of next week, and then you're looking at sub 200 million carryout. And we're talking hundreds of millions of bushels here for beans, whereas when we go to corn, we're talking 2.2 billion bushels.
Right.
So the fraction of beans that we need, or the amount of surplus we have in corn is a fraction, or I guess
yeah.
10 times the amount we have in beans. So
right, yeah.
Very, very difficult to handle. I would say if you're new to this, stay away from beans altogether. But if you want to do it, I'd keep the risk fixed, because you're going to have these moves where this morning you probably thought you were the smartest guy in the world, and by 11 you were reminded how little control we have over any of these positions.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great way to say it. You know, the bean market is just going to be – it is going to be the wild card. It's going to be the one that's the most volatile. And it can have days where, you know, over the course of 4 days, we're down a dollar, you hit the lows, and then we're up 40 cents. You know, it's just, and it's going to be like that, in my opinion, between now and let's say the first week or two in August, you know, unless, you know, the forecasts just show great weather for, you know, the next 6 weeks and nothing changes. But as the weather changes, as we get more exports coming to the United States, as the analysts and the banks change their supply and demand numbers, it's just going to be – I just got a feeling this ride in soybeans is not done yet.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think it's going to be
– Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be back after the WASDE, right?
Yeah.
Next week?
We got the WASDE on Tuesday, and then we'll take a breather after the market closes and then record this. And, you know, until then, I would just say, you know, follow – John on This Week in Grain. I'm on Twitter at Turner's Take, and I also have my own newsletter, Turner's Take. Mm-hmm. And John and I's contact information are in the show notes. So if you go to our website to listen to this, or if you're looking at it through iTunes or something like that, if you look at the show notes, all our contact information's in there too.
Fantastic. Thanks for joining me, Greg.
Hey, thanks a lot, John. Talk to you next week.
Have a good one.
Bye.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.